plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Hey Zedheads, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason. This is the Walking Dead Cast, episode 92. This is a special edition. I've got writer Melody Beatty on again, and we had an awesome conversation. I felt like last time when she was on, it was great, but I didn't ask her. I listened to it again. I didn't ask her enough questions about the actual episode that she wrote. So this time I ask her all about some of the questions that we had about like Maggie and Glenn and what it's like to write the action scenes, how much of that is in the script, you know, just her insights into Daryl and Merle, which are two characters that she said she loves to write, and different things like that. And also a little bit about, you know, they're back in the writer's room for season four. So how that's going, and just maybe a hint of what Walking Dead is going to be like in the next season. So it was a good talk, and I think you guys are going to like it.
Jason?
Hey.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I was just wondering how you balance doing writing with having a family.
Oh my God, it's so hard. I don't know. Every day is a different miracle to get through. I don't know how people do it.
I mean, it seems like a lot of the writers in Hollywood, at least when they get started, are kids who just throw themselves into it and they do it from morning to tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't imagine how you can manage that, but it's impressive.
Well, I've been lucky, and with the exception now of Scott Gimple, all of my bosses have been parents.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so they're all very understanding, you know, that people want to get home, you know, and see their kids for dinner, and you know, so I've been very lucky in that respect.
When you started, did you when did you start?
TV writing?
Yeah.
My first TV writing job was on Deadwood with David Milch.
That's awesome.
And my kids were like 2 and 4 years old, I think, at the time.
Oh, my God.
Or maybe 3 and 5. No, they were like 3 and 5. Like, they were babies. Uh-huh. It was so hard.
How did that come about? Last time we talked, I didn't really ask you about how you got started. How did you get started?
I got started, well, how I met David, or how...
Like, did you know you wanted to be a TV writer, or did you kind
no,
of fall
I didn't,
into
I only, I didn't have, I didn't plan on being a TV writer. I wanted to be a short story writer and a poet and a novelist and live in New York, and that was what I wanted to do.
Okay.
That's
funny, because when people in Hollywood say that, I've heard that before, and they kind of laugh. I think it's cool. It's all good. Like when I went to school for writing, and we kind of looked down. Uh-huh. At that time, I felt very pretentious. Oh, I would never write a script. But now there's such good TV on that you really hit at those same human emotions that any literary fiction would, I think.
Well, I definitely feel like this is the golden age of television, and I'm a big fan of TV and defend TV as a medium, and I love writing television, and I think it's such an exciting time to be a television writer.
Yeah, totally, especially on cable TV like you are.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
So you already had kind of a background in writing short stories and things like that, and then you kind of fell
into...
Not
really. I mean, I just had, like, aspirations, really.
Okay.
But that's what I wanted to do. I worked at Interview Magazine in New York.
Okay.
I was an editorial assistant. Mm. And I moved to Los Angeles when I got pregnant with my first son when I was 22. Mm. And shortly after I had him, I wrote a pilot, and it was sort of about my, whatever, it doesn't even matter. I wrote a pilot, and it got in the hands of a guy named Henry Brummel, who, are you a Homeland fan?
Yeah, totally.
So Henry Brummel is one of the executive producers and writers of Homeland, and he was sort of my first mentor, and we worked together for a little while, and then Carolyn Strauss, who is a friend of mine, who's a producer, and she, at the time, worked at HBO and introduced me to David Milch, and then I worked for David Milch for the next few years.
What was the
and
pilot?
So I was. What was the pilot that I wrote?
It's like a spec.
Yeah, it was just about a woman in LA with a baby that was not having an easy time being a mother, and the relationship she had with her Mexican nanny. It was sort of an upstairs, downstairs. It was stupid.
It wasn't, I mean, it must have been good. It got you noticed, right?
I don't know if it was good, but I was very fortunate to have had those two guys mentor me.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool. Let's get into the actual episode. Last time we talked, I feel like I didn't really ask you enough about the actual, like, episode and the characters, and Karen and I totally, my co-host, we just totally dug this week's episode, so good job.
I'm glad you guys liked it.
We totally did, and I liked it for a lot of different reasons, but it was very dynamic. I liked that there were you know, there was a lot of character development, but there were also long scenes with no dialogue. Did you envision that when you were writing it? And I'm just curious, like, during those action scenes, or more about the action scene at the end, but also, like, with Rick, how much of that you beat out yourself, and or do you just kind of give general instructions and let them work it out on set, or what?
Well, the action stuff is really, really well choreographed. That's all. You mean how much of that is?
Yeah, like what do you, how do you, how is that in the script?
It's pretty well choreographed in the script.
Okay.
And then usually what happens is you get there and you realize that you can't do what you want to do, and so you have to make adjustments and make them. But it's usually just it's pretty well choreographed in the script. It's definitely one of my weaker my weaker points as a writer is writing action, which this show has helped me improve greatly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was one of the best action sequences of the series so far.
I will say that Glenn Mazzara had a lot of influence on that action sequence. Cannot take credit for how, I wish I could, but I can't.
Mm-hmm. You were there on set though, huh?
Mm-hmm. I covered it and was there for it, but he definitely had a huge influence in the designing of it.
Do you, as things progress over the course of the year, you write your episode, they film it, and then they start editing. Are you involved? Do you see interim or, you know, just different scenes, or do you just see it like whole at the end?
I see the dailies and then I see the cuts as they come out, and on season three, Glenn was always very inviting. I was always allowed to give notes on the cuts. But that's sort of every showrunner runs their post situation differently.
So Scott Gimple won't listen to you?
I have no idea how Scott Gimple is going to do it. I would imagine he would. He's a good collaborator.
Yeah,
I imagine he would.
Last time you, I think, had compliments for him, so hopefully it'll go well.
I think you will. He's a good friend and a great writer. And
yeah, so yeah, you guys, you're starting on season four now.
We just started our fifth week in the writer's room.
Uh-huh. And wow.
It's crazy to be thinking ahead and new stories, and it felt like we were living with season three for so long. It's such a interesting experience to be moving into season four.
How's it going?
I think it's going well. I think it's going really, really well. It's really interesting. It's always sad. Like, I always have a hard time on a new season of as a fan of a show or write. Well, this is my first time working on a second season of a show, but mm-hmm. I always have such a hard time letting go of the past season. Like, The Wire was a really hard show for me in that sense, because every new season felt like a new show in a way. Mm-hmm. Did you watch The Wire?
No, but I know how they kind of switched focus.
And so, you know, just like switching gears and thinking about the fourth season has been, but I think Scott has a really, really strong, interesting vision, and it's exciting to be able to be there and help him execute it.
Awesome. Yeah.
But he has a very strong vision.
Awesome. That's so good to hear.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what we want.
And I think he has a vision that will, appeal to all the fans, to the non-comic book and the comic book fans.
Nice. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, Walking Dead's been on three seasons, and it has felt like, I mean, there's definitely a through line for sure, but it feels like each season has its own very distinctive feel. And so you're saying season four is going to kind of have that too, huh?
It will definitely have its own feel for sure.
Cool.
I think people will be really into it.
I hope so. I am. I'm glad you're saying that. So that's great.
No, I do. I think people will be really into it. I think the diehard fans, and, you know, we have so many different kinds of fans. We have the craziest fans ever. They love the show. The fans of the show are wild and amazing. And, but I think they'll be happy.
Yeah.
It's been really exciting. It's been fun and exciting for me to be working on it. So
nice.
But it's different. It's definitely different.
Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm in contact with because, you know, our listeners are the kind of fans who are so excited that they want to listen to people talking about it for an extra hour after, you know, so
right.
They're okay. So my favorite thing about this episode, I mean, I loved the interaction with Daryl and Merle, but my favorite moment definitely was, and it was so sad, but Axel getting shot in the head. It was so sad. And I felt like you were leading us down this path of, we're going to have some interaction, or we're going to have some development there. And, mm-hmm. He was so charming, and I just really started to like him. And right at the moment when you like him the most, because he made a funny joke, is when he gets it, and it's so out of nowhere. But the question I want to ask you about that is, I also felt like in the episode that maybe you were hinting that maybe he can't be trusted. Was that intentional at all?
That who? That Axel can't be trusted?
Yeah, because when Carol kind of was showing him how to load the gun, and it was right after he admitted that he'd actually lied about why he was in prison.
Right.
It was sort of like a little iffy, like, oh, is he a liar?
I don't feel like Axel was a liar. No, that wasn't.
He's just a good guy.
I do. I feel like Axel was a good guy. I feel like he maybe said some inappropriate things.
Yeah, creepy.
But I think he was a good guy, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so was it hard for you to let go of him, or?
It was. It was hard because I felt like even though he was introduced in episode one in Glenn's episode, it was just a flash of him. And so I felt like in episode two, which I wrote, that I really introduced his character, so I felt really sad that I was also killing his character. everyone was sad to, they get really close down there, you know, the cast.
It seems like Lou in particular, just from what little I've seen, is like a guy that you're going to warm up to, you know, he just seems like a really good guy.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. He's a smart guy and fun and brings a lot to the job, and We were lucky to have him.
This is our favorite clip from him.
How old are you anyway?
17.
17. Interesting.
I always play that.
So creepy.
So,
I didn't think that did a lot to protect our Axel character.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean...
I thought we were going to be asking the audience to forgive maybe a little too much with that, but they did. They forgave it.
It was like, man, that is so creepy. And Carol was obviously not interested, but I think you guys did a great job of just slowly over the next couple or three episodes building it so that I believed that now that Daryl was gone, that Carol might go for this guy. And in especially the episode you just wrote, it seemed like he was totally going to redeem himself. And then bam.
Poor Axel.
Oh, well. Let's get on to Merle and Daryl. So this is where I wanted to bring up. I didn't know this last time I interviewed you, but your mom is Melody. You say your last name, Beattie?
Yeah, Beattie.
Beattie. She wrote The Language of Letting Go, which is she's an icon in the world of codependence and getting past addictions and unhealthy patterns.
She is.
And so when I thought about that, I was like, there's some of that in Walking Dead for sure between like Ed and Carol, and most prominently lately, I think Daryl and Merle maybe have had a codependent relationship. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree with that. I think that when Daryl chose to go with Merle in, was it episode 9?
Is that when he chose, last week.
I think that he didn't want to go. I think he wanted to stay, but he put Merle's needs in front of his own. And, you know, I don't think he wanted to
leave.
I don't think he wanted to leave Rick. I think he found a new family. And I think he knew that Merle was not where he was at anymore, but he went with Merle anyway. I guess the diagnosis would be codependency.
And what?
For sure.
What happened between the time that he decided to go with Merle and then your episode where he realizes to go back to jail? What was his process?
You mean why did he decide? What happened on that journey that he decided that the prison was where his home really was?
Yeah. So what was going on in his mind?
I think that there were a few scenes and I'm trying to remember back about how I'm trying to remember his emotional process in that episode. It seems like so long ago, but I do know that after the display on the bridge, when Merle wasn't gonna help those people, that was sort of the final straw for him, and he wasn't gonna stay with him anymore, And I think he could only, like, he tried to take it. Merle antagonized him. But I think that was the final straw for him, was that he just wasn't who he was anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the sense I got is he probably knew that, Merle was his own worst enemy and everything, but he didn't really feel how different they'd become. He had to kind of experience it to really get a sense of, oh yeah, this isn't going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
yeah.
The best line was, can you guess what my favorite line is?
I might be the one leaving.
No, it's the one where, Merle said, damn near killed the Chinese kid. And,
and he said he's Korean. You know, I didn't even realize that that was
a callback to
season one. I didn't until AMC, Walking Dead AMC, tweeted something about it. I didn't even realize that. I mean, it must have been somewhere in my subconscious that had happened. But that's funny. Yeah. We wrote that. I wrote that on the set. That wasn't even in the script. That was something we like came up with on the fly, real quick.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that because my very first thought was that's genius because I remembered him saying it. Daryl kept calling him a Chinaman.
I wish that I had planned that out more.
I think it was in your subconscious mind.
It had to have been because, yeah, anyway. So.
And then, okay, this, one more thing. Smaggy and Glenn, I was having a little trouble understanding exactly what was going on between them. And I think maybe they're not sure, but one of our listeners wrote in and I want to know if she's right. It says, seems to me Glenn is reacting based on, quote, I should have been there to protect you because you're weak and I'm your man, which further psychologically strips Maggie of her power and makes her more of a victim after already being made powerless and a victim by the governor. He's compounding the problem. He has a reason to be upset this happened to her, but on the same token, he's making her victimization all about him. Would you say that?
I would agree with that.
Okay. That's pretty clear. Okay. I was sort of like, why are they fighting? And I read this and I'm like, yeah, that seems right.
I also think that she feels a little bit like a little bit ashamed that she's having such a big reaction to what happened to her because so much is happening around her that she feels a little bit ashamed that she's making anything all about her.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because I don't think that Maggie's somebody who wants a lot of attention for, you know what I mean? She's the one to sit in the corner crying with people looking at her. And so I think that she feels like a little surprised maybe that she's as affected by what happened as she is. Mm-hmm. And I like that scene when she gets mad at Glenn. I love that scene when she pushes him. Mm-hmm. It was really intense when we rehearsed that scene because she just sort of did it and it was super intense. And I don't know if that intensity ever made it, you know, on the screen, but it was really intense.
Yeah. I think it was pretty intense. How did you, when you saw the whole episode together, is it hard for you to, take a step back and take it in as, you know, a viewer?
Mm-hmm. I hate it.
You don't like watching it?
It's just so hard for me.
The whole show or just the ones that you wrote?
Just the ones that I wrote. It's so easy when I have nothing to do with it. I got to cover an episode that I didn't write. Episode 13. I went down to produce and it was so easy to do. Because I had no shame and hate attached to anything. I was just like, this is, you know what I mean? Like, I really can't see it. Andy Lincoln doesn't watch the show. He's said that he doesn't watch the show and he doesn't watch the show. And I do understand why he doesn't watch the show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because of the show. It's because of, I think it's a challenging experience.
It's really interesting because someone who like so appreciates it and hears someone say that you're like, what? But, I understand. I mean, Karen, this is like not on the same level at all, but Karen, my co-host, she never listens to our podcast. She hates hearing herself.
I totally understand that.
Are you going to listen to this one?
No, and I didn't listen to the last one.
You were good.
I would never listen to it. I couldn't do it.
You wrote and you're like, do I sound like a total idiot? But we got a lot of compliments on that episode.
Well, I won't be listening to this one either, so.
Okay.
I'll growl like a zombie, though, if you want.
Okay, that's coming up. Just a second. Okay, let's see. What else did I want to know? Oh, yeah. Did Glenn not believe Maggie?
I think that he wanted to believe her. I think there was a part of him that didn't totally believe her, but ultimately, yes, he did.
Okay. So maybe just a shade of wondering if she's protecting him from, or something like that, but mostly, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Because I think she would protect him.
All right. Well, just again, thanks for writing such a great episode. You don't have any more this season, huh?
I don't have any more of this season, no.
That you wrote. And do you know next season how many, like, do we know how many episodes there will be in this season?
There will be at least 16 next season.
Okay. And you'll write a couple?
I will write a couple.
Cool.
I'm already working on my first one.
Awesome.
in a preliminary way, but yeah.
I just have one more question for you. So the whole like pain of seeing your episode on the screen, you don't want to see it. So where does the joy come in?
You mean of the job?
Yeah.
I feel good when the script is done. Mm-hmm. Is when I feel good. And there's always a joy. There's a joy attached to, you know, to all of it. And it's just not in watching the episode.
It's just
on television. But I have a joy attached to all of it. Especially the, you know, finishing the script and you know, I'm very proud of the season and
you should.
There's a lot of, it was a wild year, but, mm-hmm. But I'm very proud of it. And
yeah, you know. It's like, there's so much like mystery for all of us about what's going on, but do you, I mean, there's six more episodes, right? So mm-hmm. I can't ask you, I don't even know what to ask you about that, but do you have anything to say about like what's coming up this season?
No.
Not really. We'll just have to watch, huh?
Just watch. No, I think it's a really satisfying season and a satisfying ending and
good.
And you know, I don't know what else to say.
Okay. I mean, we're so happy with the way it's gone so far. So it just, yeah, we're loving it. So, and I mean that, I mean, we had some problems with how season two went and we thought it picked up at the end and just mm-hmm. season three has just been totally awesome and made us happy. We're doing this podcast. So
oh, stoked. Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Who wrote the next episode?
I know Nicotero's directing. Can't Angela?
This is where it gets confusing because we shot a little bit out of order.
I think it's Angela King.
Angela King, right. Okay. Yeah, Angela did. Has Angela ever been on your podcast?
No, I tweeted her, but she didn't tweet back.
So. She has a little baby at home, so.
I'll try. But, I'll try again.
But she's really nice. But I'll bring it up at work today.
Oh, that'd be great. And then
she's really nice. She's great.
Yeah, I heard her on the Nerdist, and she sounded great. I went back and listened to Scott Gimple and Mazzara and her just so I could try to get more of a beat on Scott now that he's the showrunner. But, okay, so let's do a satisfying ending to this episode.
Oh, okay.
You said you've been practicing, right?
No, but but you did tell me that I didn't have to actually do it.
Yeah,
I
but was then you up. Said that we couldn't talk about certain things, and so
okay.
You know what, you don't have to do it actually. I'm a man of my word.
Okay, you already have one.
Yeah, I already have one. Yeah, it's great.
Okay, good. So let's not do one.
Let's not do it.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye.